All right, today's show, more on the house settlement, scholarship caps, cut sports, no more walk-ons. Plus, how's Notre Dame going to look? Ryan Day at Big Ten Media Day, Santa Claus in Iowa, and Pole Assassin's back.
Time now for the College Football Inquirer with Dan Wetzel.
Let me tell you what, there's nothing a Big Ten fan likes more than saying, how's the Big Ten looking? And he's saying, well, let's talk Notre Dame.
Russ Dellinger.
Clutch your pearls, Dan.
And SI's Pat Forty.
Dan's anti-facts and anti-truth.
Here's Pat, Russ, and Dan.
All right, welcome to the pod, or bonjour, we have to say here in Paris. I know how to say bonjour and merci.
Yeah, that's about all I've picked up, too.
Not so good.
What is that, hello and thank you?
Yeah,
basically?
Mainly I just say thank you. Just thank you for my stupidity as I wander around your city. No idea where I'm going.
Yeah. I've tried excusez-moi a couple times. But I will say, like, that's an American thing where we say excuse me a whole lot more than they do here. They just kind of gloss over that. Yeah, I may be in your way. I don't care. You know?
Yeah, they're a little more rude there. Yeah, Parisians.
Yeah, I'm not sure I would say rude as much as like just vaguely disinterested in politeness. You know, maybe that's rudeness. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't find them rude. They're just getting where they got to get. It's a big city. Yeah. Pat, we referenced your extremely small hotel room that's too small for podcasting. So you're at the main press center of the Olympics. Hell yeah, College Football Inquirer. Clearly no one else there talking about college football. That's the dedication we have.
It is.
But yes, you have a very small hotel room.
I need a college football story from Paris from y'all. You know, just ask anything? People on the street, you know, what do you think about the Tide this season? See what they see right. These Parisians say.
You know, I got Virginia Tech kind of as a sleeper team in the ACC. What do you think?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Good that would defense. Go over well. Yeah. That really might provoke some rudeness.
Yeah,
actually,
they might be rude
in response to that.
Who knows?
Yeah. No, I'm in the Sports Illustrated office in the main press center. My room is roughly a half a room. It's great for sleeping. And it actually has a little like micro balcony that you kind of have to squeeze out a window to get on. But for podcasting purposes, the lack of chair, lack of desk, and lack of space, not going to fly. It's like a great 1870 something, I don't know, building, but not very modernly equipped.
Yeah, we're all about the modern. We're all about the future, and the future is this house settlement deal. Ross and I did an emergency pod to get into the details. So if you missed that, you can go back. If you want to get, we drilled down. There are two main parts to this that I think has captured a lot of the attention. One is that football roster size will go from 85 to 105, but they have to be all scholarships. There'll be no walk-ons anymore. Now, this both will aid the big schools who have more scholarships to offer, and we're worried about that competitive balance. There's major blowback from coaches about losing their walk-ons. A lot of coaches, maybe most vocally or famously, Dabo Swinney, was a walk-on. They love their walk-ons. I think everybody likes walk-ons. I don't really know who is anti-walk-on out there. There's that, and then the other is whether this would, by increasing scholarship roster sizes in non-revenue sports, certainly basically football and football in other sports as well, will it lead to the cutting of sports? Will all the revenue sharing with the athletes lead to the cutting of sports? Pat and I are at the Olympics. The USOC is quite concerned about this because it's really college athletics that powers Team USA and has for a long time. So there's a lot of a bit on that. Pat, you were, covering swimming or something when couldn't do the emergency pod. What are your thoughts from what you've heard, though, on the those two topics?
Yeah, I did read Ross's fine reporting on that. And thank you. This is really, we should just say, this is the College Football Inquirer podcast powered by Ross while we're in Paris. So keep coming up with some news, dude. No, my thoughts... There are a lot of Olympic sport coaches that are very worried right now, whether they're here at the Olympics or whether they're at home, about what's the future of their teams, how they're going to be funded, how they're going to be cut to make things work in other areas. The football roster size, to me, is exactly where it should be at the most. Like, I cannot really get, understand, or sympathize with the coaches saying, you know, that 105 isn't enough or whatever. And this idea, no, we're not anti-walk-on, but this is, like, you're giving these walk-ons now scholarships. Is that a bad thing? Usually they get them, you know, and you bring some guy into a team meeting room and pretend that you need to talk to him, and then you give him a scholarship and everybody cheers and it's this great thing. Well, now we're going to give 20 more guys scholarships. This is good, isn't it? Right? This is like the death of the walk-on. Okay, you're going to lose 106 to 130. Guess what? They weren't playing. I ran the numbers on this for SEC teams where the average participation in games was, you know, somewhere like mid-50s to low-60s for the SEC teams. And a lot of these teams had 125, 130, some up to 140 people on the team. They weren't playing. You're going to have injuries, yes. You're going to have people quit. You're going to have transfers. You can still survive with 105. The NFL has a 54 limit. They have a 16-person practice squad, so that's 70. And, yeah, they can go out and get new people when they need them. They still don't. They do not use 105. They don't during the course of a season. So once again, coaches crying about the death of football here, it absolutely falls on deaf ears with me.
Let me just wanted to clarify something. You know, like just from what Dan led off the show about, you know, obviously the death of walk-ons and stuff. But I think most schools probably won't scholarship every roster spot, right? There's no way they can, even at the highest level, can afford it. So there will be open roster spots that won't be scholarshiped for walk-ons. Now, I mean, at certain places, like, and in certain sports, right? Like football in the Big Ten and SEC, right? Probably will scholarship to the full 105. Basketball teams will scholarship most of them, I'm guessing, to the full 15 now. And men's basketball was 13. You know, but there, I think for everything else, like, I would be surprised, right, if schools scholarship up to the limit. And so it does leave you spots for players who aren't earning a scholarship or who are earning partial, because now it's all equivalency. So even in football, and I heard some places might do this, especially like in the ACC or Big 12 or in the G5, they can't afford to have 105, you know, full football scholarships. So maybe they'll have 95, and the last 10 who aren't scholarshiped get some kind of partial, or the last 20, I guess, get like a partial scholarship, and they spread out 10 maybe over the last 20. You could see kind of that sort of stuff happening. And obviously in Olympic sports, you could see a lot of that happening where that's what happens now, right? You get a partial scholarship now. A lot of athletes are, I don't think many athletes, right, Pat, are on full scholarship, like swimming teams, right? They're on partials, and I would guess that will continue.
Yeah, generally speaking, very few, depending on, you know, the difference between available scholarships and roster size. But yeah, most of them, you may have one or two full rides at a time in Olympic sports. So yeah, it'll be a big change from that standpoint. And yes, how many people are going to fund in those sports? But to your point, so yes, all right, we're still going to have walk-ons. Now, whether you are scholarshipping 95 or scholarshipping 105, it's still the same players, right? And some of them are getting scholarships, some aren't. This idea that we're getting rid of walk-ons, you still have 105 players that you're giving an opportunity to play, funded or not. I fail to see the sky is falling mentality here.
You know, this was a compromise between, well, it's between administrators and coaches, and I think is also a compromise between the two big leagues and everybody else. You know, I think the Big Ten wanted more like 120. SEC coaches probably, I think, wanted 110. And I think a lot like Big 12 ACC was probably more around 100. So they kind of met in the middle. But there, you know, many administrators, ADs were on the lower side of this, obviously. Some of them, I mean, I was talking to one AD who thought it should be 75, but coaches want more, obviously. And you can't, you couldn't have 75, right? It would be illegal. It would be against the settlement rules. One particular unimportant line in the settlement is that the roster limits cannot be set at below the current scholarship limits that are going away. So like, you couldn't have 75 in football because you have 85 scholarships now. But you can cut sports. That there's an opening in the settlement that allows you to eliminate sports for sure and allows the NCAA to decrease the sport minimum, which is 16, I believe, right now. There, you know, there's a pathway for that to change, and I'm guessing that is going to change.
So before we get to that, on the walk-ons, I get William Christopher Sweeney's bit. You know, he was a walk-on. He said if Gene Stallings doesn't see him walking on to the Alabama team, and I believe that was more of a traditional, like, we're going to have a tryout, who comes out for the team, right? Would Dabo Sweeney be have the life and the career that he had and all of that? He says no, probably not. Who knows? Somebody would be coaching Clemson, though, and I'm sure he would be quite successful doing something else. So it's not like, you know, everything's dramatic, right? Everything's dramatic.
Of course.
But I do.
Or like, hey, maybe he could have gone and like gotten a scholarship at Arkansas State and still been around
another,
football.
Right. Another program. Right.
Yeah. So, right. You know, I don't know. I mean, I think we all like the concept of like, hey, we're going to have open gym in basketball. We're going to have open tryout. And some guy gets on the team and it's a great story. And maybe you lose that in some way. My main concern, though, those are the few and far betweens. My main concern is competitive keeping not exasperating the competitive imbalance that already exists in college athletics and the ability of the big schools to go out and recruit, have 20 extra guys on their rosters that are scholarship players that would otherwise either be playing in the middle of their league or in the group of five is what makes me nervous. Now, I want to see how this plays out. I'm not going to be what I always criticize the rest of them as, like, the sky is falling, it's over. Like, you got to take some time to think about it. The world is not going to end. And actually listening to both Sweeney and Mack Brown this week in Charlotte, it was either during ACC Media Days or whatever, Marina David Hale story from ESPN, you know, they were saying that having that many guys would be problematic, 105 scholarship players. And maybe this leads to what you're talking about. There also was a CBS, was it David Cobb, did a story, and Sweeney, or I don't know where these quotes are coming from. I don't want to just be plucking quotes. So, but Sweeney said, he says, when you have that many guys on scholarship, you think you've got transfers now. Wait till the numbers get there. It's going to be a lot. I do think you'll see the transfer number go way up because you only travel about 80. That will be a lot of football players not getting to play. Again, the walk-on program is the sport meme the most, blah, blah, blah. Kids want to be a part of it. All right, so. But what are you hearing, Ross? You're doing more college football, talking to more college football people than Pat and I are, though it's actually kind of interesting, all the people that text you because of the Olympics. Will this, and when you're saying a lot of schools won't go to 105, like, is it a matter of, like, kids are not going to want to be on a non-travel scholarship? They want to play. They only have 4 years, and at some point you can't just keep redshirting. Like, will they really be 105? So, like, tell me about that. Is that actually because that would be encouraging to me that kids want to play, and so we're not going to just sit there and be like, yeah, that is all going to go to the main school and be player number 105 rather than starting at Texas Tech or Boise State or Akron or wherever.
Yeah, this is a definitely a conversation being had. As many, I think, believe that. This thing will level itself out. Maybe kind of like we saw with NIL, right? It'll level itself out because of the competition, because players wanting to play early. That will be an issue. That's an issue in basketball. I think I remember, you know, we talked maybe on the pod about John Calipari's approach at Arkansas now with, like, whatever. He's not going to full of, you know, not a full roster or something like of the 13. Well, now it's 15. It's two more. I was on the phone to a basketball coach actually over the weekend. And I said, congratulations, you have two more scholarships. And he said, I'm not using those. We're not going to use those scholarships because we can't get players here because they want to play. And so I think you're going to find that in football, right? The 101, the 102 in football, 103, 104 positions. I mean, they're not going to play, and they might not play for a while. So I think a lot of this stuff will level itself out, and it'll be interesting to see. And now that coach I talked to over the weekend was, you know, a non-football playing Division I school. And so, you know, it's not like they're sitting on a bunch of money, but I think there's a lot of, you know, probably basketball teams right now and the lower level D1 that aren't fulfilling the 13, let alone 15. And same for baseball, right? Baseball, there's a lot of attention being paid right now to baseball because it had like one of the biggest jumps of, you know, it had 11.7 and now it have 34, right? So it's a 22.5 basically jump. And I mean, there are plenty of D1 baseball teams at the major conference level, at the Big Ten level, right? Because baseball in the Big Ten, it isn't one of their, premier sports like it is in the SEC and the ACC. And there, some of those schools in the Big Ten, they're not offering 11.7, so they're definitely not going to, they're definitely not going to go to 34. So I think this is going to happen in plenty of sports. We've seen all the roster numbers. Dan and I talked about them Friday. You know, some of these sports are increasing by 32 scholarships, 20 scholarships. I think swimming is, wouldn't mind Pat's take on swimming. Men's swimming is going up to 30, a roster of 30 from 9.9 scholarships to basically 30. So 20 increase and a 16 increase in women's swimming. So it's pretty interesting. I got actually over the weekend got some texts about lacrosse, and lacrosse is going up significantly. 35 scholarships increase in men's lacrosse, 26 in women's lacrosse, and it was pretty much communicated to me over the weekend. Like, right, no way we're getting to that point. I mean, we had 18 and 12 scholarships originally, or 12 and 12, I think. Scholarships in lacrosse, both lacrosse at 12, and now they have, you know, in the 30s or in the 40s. We're you know, schools aren't going to go to that level.
Team chemistry becomes a thing. Like, we're like, and we'll see how this plays out. But like, USA men's basketball team beat Serbia on Sunday. Jason Tatum, fresh off winning the NBA championship, doesn't play because that's how it is. And so a lot of times on these kind of teams, like a national team, they bring a guy who understands his role is going to be practice. But that's a hard role for Jason. You know, this is the extreme, right? Jason Tatum. So it will be interesting to do that. I can tell you one thing. Pat would be a lot wealthier if men's swimmers had full rides. Right
now. Yeah. Where was this 5-10 years ago? Come on.
Yeah. So, you ought to sue someone, Pat. Everyone's suing.
You know what? Why not? No, those are massive scholarship jumps. And it boggles my mind to think of rosters that big that are all scholarship people, and just the huge increase in expense there. And I think if schools can avoid doing that, they certainly will. There's a lot of parents of Olympic sport athletes out there that are dancing right now thinking, yeah, we're finally going to, we're going to get some easy tuition here. But I'm just not sure the schools are going to be willing to go there and to those numbers. I mean, so 35 were going in baseball, and I thought baseball was wildly underfunded. Like, I never understood that. So, but where did the 34 go? Do you have so if you got two position players for every position, that's 18. And then actually it's 16 because not counting the pitcher. And then do you have that many pitchers on top of that? I mean, you can go three deep at some places.
10 pitchers.
Yeah. Since you have 10 to 12 pitchers. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, that still doesn't get you there.
Yeah, no, it still falls a little short. I think the original roster size was, I think, 35. You could split Well, you could split the 11.7, I think, over 28, but there was a roster size of 35. They made it really complicated. And then it went up to you could split the 11.7 over 32 with a roster, again, of 35. So I guess they just met in the middle there. I'm not sure. There was a back and forth. You know, the SEC and the ACC are the two biggest baseball leagues, I think you could say. And they went back and forth on that for a while. Greg Sankey and Jim Phillips kind of going back and forth with their recommendations from their membership about baseball. I think they talked about as low as 32 and as high as 35.
Okay, we'll be back right after this. When it gets to can they fund these teams, will they fund these teams, there's obviously great worry that they will not and they will start cutting teams. I don't know. Schools have tried to cut teams and it's usually pretty hard to do. Occasionally it succeeds, but there's a lot of blowback. I think Michigan State got rid of a swim team. Stanford tried to eliminate some teams and it didn't.
Iowa eliminated some and then had to bring back, like they brought back women's swimming because they were getting sued.
Yeah.
Yeah. Stanford, I remember it was like 11 teams.
Yes.
Well, they
Stanford they got like the most, back, they got like, you know, 38 and they cut to 27, I think.
So. Yeah. And they brought back them all, I believe.
Brought them all back.
Yeah. Yep. It was a lawsuit from wrestlers. Stanford wrestlers, they were really active there and brought it back. When all that happened a couple of years ago, I remember writing a story about is the future of Olympic sports, and I remember talking about it on the pod, is the future of Olympic sports funded in some other way, right? By alums or endowments, all that stuff. And maybe. I don't see, Dan, what you're talking about, you know, eliminating sports, this leading to that. Yeah, I do see that as a possibility, but more so I see the de-investing, you know, in sports more so. You know, and we talked about that on the pod Friday, is the tiering of sports. Some ADs have been even public about it now, and they're having conversations behind closed doors with their coaches about how their sports are going to be tiered now. And if you're in the bottom tier, you know, so the Olympic sports that probably don't get a lot of eyeballs, don't get ticket sales at all. You know, you're going to be they're going to de-invest you, especially if you're a men's sport, because of Title IX stuff and the balance of Title IX. If you're, you know, a men's sport that doesn't generate a lot of ticket sales, you're probably going to be de-invested. Your scholarships are probably going to be reduced. Your staffing might be reduced. Salaries, I would guess, are eventually going to be reduced. And they're going to work all that up toward the top tier. They're going to move all that money probably to the top tier. So it'd be basically like we had said Friday, a veritable club kind of sport. I'd expect more of that.
I think if you could wave a magic wand, because we talked about this with conference realignment, like some of these sports don't need to be played under the parameters of a football league that is designed to create billions of dollars. And I may be wrong here. I'm taking, because someone's going to tell me I got the rankings all wrong, but I'm guessing the Big Ten is not fantastic at tennis or something, right? And does it make sense to have a tennis league where you're flying to LA and these kids are flying all over the country and we got to go play Oregon, we got to go to New Jersey? Would you not be better having a tennis team that plays a regional grouping the way we've had it in lacrosse and hockey at times and like beach volleyball, and some of the West Coast teams have their own league? Like, hey, it's okay to play just this local team. Like, you know, Boston College hockey should be playing in Hockey East where it does. It's okay that Northeastern doesn't have a team, or they go play Maine, or they play, like, that makes sense for hockey. And that would make sense because, I mean, certainly couldn't have an ACC team, but even if you did, like, why would you do that? Everything's easier if it's a little more regionalized. And if they eventually get to this system where a lot of schools in a region tear down at stuff that, hey, we're not that great at anyway, maybe that club level actually works better.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, Ohio State, Illinois, and Michigan have actually been quite good at tennis here.
Okay,
here
we go. So, yeah. What do I know? I'm just, I was going straight by weather. You know, I don't know. If I was a tennis player, I'd be at Texas or USC.
USC, baby. Yeah. UCLA.
Yeah, Miami. I don't know. So,
right. But I think your point's well taken that, I think that should be an inevitable alternative here. And I don't fully get what the, like, some of the holdback is to that. You know, that it would be, it would make so much more sense to geographically group those sports from a operating standpoint, from a recruiting standpoint, you know, travel, all that stuff. And, you know, in some of the sports, even with the realignment, there's not going to be a lot, like, you're not going to play, I would bet, in tennis, you're not going to be crisscrossing the country playing like 8 different matches. You may play one. You may go on one trip and play 2 or 3 teams at one time, and then they come to you, you know, some other. But I think there's plenty of ways around making this as difficult as it is right now. The idea of, no, we've got to have all these sports under this one conference umbrella, I think it's going to run into a reality of, like, now we got to spend some more of this off.
I don't think they're going to cut, and I don't think they're going to de-emphasize.
To your point, I will say, Dan, like, cutting sports is it's a nightmare for an AD, because you're the bad guy and you have to answer to a wildly unhappy bunch of athletes, parents, and alums who played those sports. And that's, you're just asking, and lawsuits too, you're just asking for a PR hit of epic proportion. So, as one AD said to me, like, somebody's going to have to go first, and nobody wants to be that AD that steps up and says, you know what, we're cutting 5 sports.
Yeah, it'd be difficult. So there's a lot of attention on this because it is the Olympics, that college athletics and USOC has got its own lobbying group on this. I talked to them the other day, and they said they've been lobbying Congress, and they're trying to, they're going to keep an eye on the idea that any sport gets cut. And I think I would ask Pat is, you know, I think we've discussed some of this before, but, like, should it be college sports' job to power Team USA? Like, it's sort of like it's that role has happened somewhat organically, because there's been so much money come in through football and basketball that schools created a lot of these sports or had all these sports and have funded it to the level where the training, the coaching is so high, and then we're really good at a whole bunch of sports, and we win lots of gold medals, and for 2 weeks every 4 years, everyone's kind of excited about it. But that is money earned by football players generally. I am not someone who comes on here and says, oh, football players are exploited, or football players should have been exploited. They've gotten a good deal. It's a voluntary sport to play. They're going to get a really good deal going forward. But at the end of the day, it's still money they're earning to a degree that is, at least, maybe not all of it, but disproportionately taken off of them, when maybe it should be, as Ross said, endowments or alums or government, or, like, you know, it's not the colleges of France that put together their swim teams, right? It's, they have whatever system, you know?
Right. Remember the congressional bill last year that was introduced, and it basically had the government subsidizing Olympic sports through the schools, you know, which is an interesting bill. It basically would provide provide funds through the government for the schools to continue to operate. I don't, you know, it didn't go anywhere. And maybe it will at some point, but it was connected to the Department of Defense. You guys remember that?
Yeah, well, I do remember the Defense Department.
Yeah. On, yeah, yeah.
Of course.
It was interesting because it tied into athletes when they graduate, right, going to work for the Department of Defense.
But 4 F-16s anyway, you know, and a field hockey team, please.
So one thing we talked about Friday, but I wanted to bring up in this conversation is the Title IX thing, right? So, like, one of the reasons that you wouldn't see necessarily schools go all the way to their roster limits and fund all these scholarships to a full roster is one, well, they can't financially, many of them, afford it, but also too, because if you add 10 on the men's side, obviously you have to add 10 on the women's. You know, there's a lot of questions about how Title IX applies to a revenue sharing model. However, the scholarships aren't revenue sharing. So Title IX does apply to scholarships, and that is a very big deal. It also, I think many would say that it applies to the number of athletes you're sharing revenue with. Maybe not the total compensation, but the number. That's how schools are looking at it as well. Title IX is just, while it has been an incredible benefit for the United States Olympic movement in women's sports, and we're seeing women's sports incredibly grow. When it comes to this revenue sharing model and all this new model, Title IX is certainly an issue that's complicating, I think, decisions from administrators. And many administrators ask, you know, Title IX was, I think it's 52, 53 years old now. Title IX was implemented and introduced as a law in a model that was vastly different. So should there be some adjustment in some way to it? And that question's being asked. I would be shocked.
The question right? is, the answer is yes.
Capitol
but
Hill
no,
would,
no way.
Would dare adjust Title IX in any kind of way. And there's a fear that if schools don't follow Title IX from the revenue sharing part of this, the actual compensation part, if it's not like 50-50 or close to 50-50, that they will get backlash from Congress, and they won't get help from Congress, which they would like going forward with codifying the settlement.
You get a better shot at getting Second and First Amendments rewritten.
Yeah, go after Title IX. There you go. Good career choice for your local congressman.
The hill you're going to die on. I like to rewrite Title IX. That won't come back against me. It is a different time because they forced people to care about women's sports. Women's sports, I'm not saying it's completely fit, but we are far vastly along the way of people caring a tremendous amount about women's sports. Okay. You can look at the TV ratings. You can look at the person I'm focused on at this Olympics, Simone Biles, is, you know, like, it's not what it was back then. So would a proper adjustment be necessary or be to be a good faith effort to help people who are operating in a good faith, but can't always make the letter of the law? Yes, it would. However, like I said, let's rewrite the First Amendment or the Second Amendment, and we got about as much a shot of that thing getting done. Whatever direction you want to write it, I don't know. Don't touch it. Third rail.
Yeah, the other part too. I would say the majority of schools have made good faith efforts, but there's plenty of Title IX games that go on, cooking the books accounting wise. I mean, there's a reason. First of all, there's some that just flat aren't in compliance. And then, we have 87 people on our rowing team. Why? Because, that balances the numbers, you know. So
rowers have feelings too, Pat.
Yes, they do. But when they only exist and you give them a backpack and sweats and
boat.
Then that's it.
They've got a boat, don't they?
A boat for 87 of them.
It's almost a very long boat. They go fast. That many guys in a boat, women in a boat. No.
Like, you know, very all of this, road. Again, it's just grudging, like, oh, my way, we better just change the law because we're tired of the law and we don't want to go along with the law and we want to put all the money over here. Right. So screw the law.
There you go. It ain't going anywhere. All right. Let's talk some football when we get back. All right, let's talk a little Big Ten Media Day, which we had not gotten to yet. It was last week, Media Days. Two questions for you. A, how was Ryan Day embracing the expectations on the Buckeyes? I know he says there's always the same expectations on the Buckeyes, and I appreciate that he is aware of that, and there most certainly is. Win them all, including the last game of the regular season, and then get going. And B, what were your thoughts on Sherrone Moore, who, for a guy taking over for the reigning national champions, cuts a low profile, right? Like, it hasn't been a whole lot of, there's a lot more focus on Caleb DeBoer than Sherrone Moore, who, actually won, what, four games? I think he went 4-0 as a head coach last year. Not bad. It helps when, I guess, it's not a new guy when you coach for Harbaugh because he's always suspended. So there's a positive. on the job training, what was up with those two, with Ohio State and Michigan, before we get to the rest of the league?
So first of all, you know, Michigan went on the last day, and I was actually, I chose on the last day, Big Ten Media Day, to go to, to go to Notre Dame. So I actually spent time with, a little time with Marcus Freeman up there, and the folks at Notre Dame. I got a good dose of Cruton. I walked in the Notre Dame facility. There were these guys dressed as referees or blowing whistles, and they had a boom box out there. And I'm like, what in the hell is going on? And lo and behold, it's Cruton, right? They were waiting on like a bus of players to come in and welcome them into the facility. Anyway.
With referee whistles?
Yeah. Nobody wants to see referees.
Like a whole referee thing. There was like an old fashioned, like kind of like boom box out there. you know, the things you do for Cruton, Dan, these
find like a
do.
Lou Holtz mixtape from back in the day. Yeah. what is this?
I want to go to Notre Dame because they had a referees greeting me. Nobody wants to see referees.
I assume the references were lost on you. Let me tell you what, there's nothing a Big Ten fan likes more than saying, how's the Big Ten looking? And he's saying, well, let's talk Notre Dame. Oh, that.
That's true.
But hey, Notre Dame if you were there. We'll talk Big Ten in a sec. Know. I mean, let's I'm not just going to throw it away. Well, how the guys looking down there in South Bend?
Oh, it's very, very confident. It sounds like, you know, everybody's got pretty obviously high expectations. They've got a lot coming back, but also did it right pretty good in the portal. So I think there's pretty high expectations that, you know, this is they got to make the playoff. Right. I mean, I think that's the bare minimum, is to get into the playoff. But they're going to be good enough that something did come up while I was there with a couple people, is that if Notre Dame is undefeated or has even just one loss and is ranked in the top two or three, you know, and then they're seeded number five, right, because of the way the playoff structure is. I cannot imagine the confusion and backlash from the fans when that happens. And that's a real possibility this year, is like number one ranked or number two ranked Notre Dame being the fifth seed in the playoff and having to play the first round.
Right, get over it. They only play in 12 games.
That came up. But anyway, so I did blow off the last day of Big Ten Media Day. I mean, it was 3 days, Dan. I can't be expected to go all 3 days there. But the first day was Ohio State in Ryan Day. I did follow around Ryan Day most of the day, actually. And there's no one that gets more questions, right? There's no one that gets more attention at Big Ten Media Days than Ryan Day in Ohio State. In fact, his sports information director, Jerry Emig, who's been there forever and does a great job, was keeping count of all the questions that Ryan got. And I think it was like literally like over, when you count him at the podium, it was like, you know, over 100 questions on the day. And I'm sure a lot of them repeated. And most of them were obviously about what we've been talking about, actually, right? Because they've used NIL quite a bit there. And there were a lot of questions about the changing environment in NIL. And Ross Bjork, the athletic director, was there at a story last week about their budget, their football budget, which he told me, you know, on the record, told me publicly that it was around 20 million. So you can imagine spending 20 million on a roster and the expectations for that team. They are there. But my big question to Ross Bjork and Ryan Day were about that number staying the same. You know, how do you keep that number, the new revenue sharing model, when, you know, it's going to be in the low 20 million. So you're going to still spend 20 million of the low 20 millions in football. The answer is that number probably isn't changing, right? It's just going to come from outside entities. You're going to subsidize and your revenue share is going to come from outside entities probably. But yeah, it was a lot of cues for Coach Day, and seemed to handle it well, you know, but obviously the pressure is on.
Yeah, 20 million is the number I've heard for them as well, which I would imagine is probably the industry leader right now. And if you want to look, they probably retained 8 players who could have been drafted the first 3, maybe 4 rounds, including some guys who may have been first, second round guys. And, you know, that, hey, I'm sure they wanted to be there and they want to play with their teammates and everything. But the money had to be a factor. And so they raised the money. They got the money. And you know what helped them raise the money? Losing to Michigan and then watching Michigan win the national championship. That's how this thing works. The question is interesting if that is going to be like the number going forward. And what I want to see is if Ohio State wins it all this year, which I think is entirely possible, do you get some boosters to say, hey, we got our title. I'm gonna pull back a little bit. You know, I'm not going to make this outlay every single year. We're going to, you know, we're a few years. Call me back in 5 years and see if I'm hungrier then, you know, which I wonder about Michigan. You know, Michigan made a pretty good outlay to keep Blake Corum and some of those offensive linemen and others from an NIL standpoint. And then you win your first title since 1997. Do you still want, are you in for that much money every single year? Maybe there will be, but I just kind of think there's going to be maybe a bit of a cyclical appetite to donate that level. You know, we talked about it on the pod where Urban said that this might be the most talented team he's ever seen. And we know about his hyperbole, but Jim Tressel at like the same, I think this was at a golf outing or something in June. Jim Tressel said the same thing. I don't know whether I've ever seen that much talent there. So the Ryan Day pressure is as high as it can get. And he knows it. He gets it. He's you know, he's no dummy. He understands exactly what the stakes are this year.
Now, as soon as I quoted Russ Bjork as saying and posted the story around 20 million and got into some other stuff, but that was what everybody latched on to, I got bombarded with texts from people saying that that's bullshit. Right. So typical NIL era where
is it more immediately, or less?
Oh, they're saying it's less. Yeah, they're saying that it's not what he says.
Why would you overhype it? I'm not. Let's say hypothetically, why would you?
Oh, I know. You, I think for recruiting purposes.
But then, won't recruits expect that kind of money, and then they feel like they're getting?
Yeah, that's right.
I'm not saying he did or didn't. I'm saying hypothetically, what would the benefit be for a school to say we're handing out $20 million a season, and then you're sitting there going, all right, well, $20 million a season. I'm your quarterback. You're trying to bring me in as a I deserve at least.
Yeah.
You know, $2 million of that or so, I don't know, whatever. It would seem like you'd want to lower it.
No, that's not been the case. I think schools are
overhyping. Interesting.
Yeah, or overhyping. But I'm not saying he's doing that. And their roster, the way they recruited at the transfer portal, we've talked about it, right? It's expensive. I think we all said we could do the numbers, and it's probably at least 14, 15 million.
Yeah.
Right. And he said it's more around 20. But it's just that's the issue with the transparency or the lack of transparency that we have in the NIL era, as we've discussed plenty, is you don't really know. There's nothing. There's no like database to go to. They're trying to build that. But
Dan's
there are
against
some legal
the database.
Issues around that too.
Dan is against.
I don't think Dan it's necessary. Who cares? Yeah. I don't think the players Dan's should.
Anti facts and anti truth.
Anti garbage rail. Who cares? Yeah. You get what you get. Make your deal. I don't know. That's control freaks wanting. I get why they want to know. They don't want to overpay, but I'm pro worker, Pat.
I'm pro information as a journalist.
Pro worker. I don't care how much they're giving these guys.
Documented information.
They get suckered into it. I wonder with NIL. We may never find this all out, but like Pat said, hey, we won the title. Now I'm going to cut back. I'm going to buy a boat or something like that, or I'm not going to throw in that. I also wonder, the last X number of years, the stock market has been exceptional, right?
Good point.
At some point, you're going to have some years. I hope not, but knock on wood. But at some point, it might be a prolonged period where the economy is not doing so well. Or the stock market, and then you got these guys going, well, I'm not. Like, all of a sudden, your salary cap drops. That's why I thought NIL would be quite funny in that manner. I don't know what Iowa's handing out. I mean, they're drinking that damn Iowa collective beer. I know that.
Oh, yeah.
But Yeah, I mean, so, but who knows? They could have 20 million. They could have 20 grand. I got no idea what the Hawkeyes are doing, but I know this. Kurt Ferentz, quite excited about his returning team. And I mentioned them as a sleeper in the Big Ten. 80% of their offensive production is back. And I know, can the laugh track.
that is a punchline.
Doesn't matter. They're getting their quarterback, 69 of their percent of their, a lot of guys are back. They're getting Cade McNamara back at QB. There was a lot of injuries. And he said, I do believe in Santa Claus. And getting those guys back was part of that. That was a Merry Christmas for all of us.
Mm.
We tried to be really fairly cautious, diligent with our work on all that. He got a few, he's very excited about his roster. Kurt has seen a few Christmases. Maybe he's onto something here with this Santa Claus bit. Hawkeyes, Ross, what do you think? They only lost 11 guys to the transfer portal.
Yeah. Hey. Maybe so. They got the new OC. You know, who knows? You know, the way it's going to be interesting to see as we go through this, the programs that can retain their guys and whose number in the portal is pretty low, how they'll keep everybody together, right? And you get to keep some cohesion. And Iowa's always thrived on, and, you know, same thing for kind of Clemson too, is like staff cohesion and team cohesion and all that stuff. And it has worked for them to an extent. And so maybe it'll work, Dan.
Well, we will see. Tim Lester, the new offensive coordinator, he was a former head coach in the MAC. But I want to see the first time Tim Lester says, hey, we need to really open it up and let it rip here, and watch Kirk Ferentz, like, you know, try to decide if he wants to strangle him or quit, one or the other, because it's just not the way Ferentz has ever run his program. And his son may have been inept or just a terrible schemer or whatever, but the offense was still the way Kirk Ferentz wanted it in general. So I'm not sure this is going to change into some radical new Iowa. Their schedule sets up well for them. I mean, they're at Ohio State, but they don't play Oregon. They don't play Penn State. They don't play Michigan, and they don't play USC. So why shouldn't Ohio? This could be one of those classic Iowa years where they're sitting there having won 11 games and nobody's sure whether they're even any good.
Who else stood out as interesting during Big Ten media days, Ross?
There's a little. So this was interesting. This is the first day. Illinois was there, and Wisconsin were there on the first day. So you had Brett Bielema of Illinois and Luke Fickell of Wisconsin. Of course, Bielema, you know, formerly coached for a while at Wisconsin, had a lot of success there. And they played last season. You guys may remember Wisconsin won late because of an ineligible receiver. I believe there was something happened where an eligible receiver played or caught the ball for Wisconsin, and it wasn't called. The refs missed it, and in Wisconsin won, like, on the play or on the drive. And Brett Bielema has not forgotten about this. There was a good column actually written, I think, either by a Wisconsin media member or Illinois, I can't remember, but he interviewed both of them, and I was there for some of it. Some of the comments, but Brett Bielema apparently is not real chatty with Luke Fickell and those at Wisconsin. So that was interesting, that whole dynamic. He hasn't forgotten about the illegal receiver and eligible receiver situation that Wisconsin kind of used to pull one over, so to speak. So that was interesting, Dan, and those two teams, I believe they play this year again.
They actually do not. I'm looking at Wisconsin.
Oh, they don't play?
No, I'm looking at Wisconsin's schedule. That's now, which is Wisconsin's schedule's really interesting, though, because they host Alabama. They're at USC. They got Penn State. They're at Iowa, and they're also they play Oregon. So it's a whopper, but. I think super interesting there. Phil Longo, second year OC, who didn't seem like a great mesh with Luke Fickell's overall scheme last year, but it might have just been hey, let's get in and get our, you know, get our feet underneath us, and now we'll go forward. They got another Rena QB. They got Tyler Van Dyke from Miami. And we'll see if they can meld a kind of, you know, spread, throw it around offense with the Wisconsin ethos of ground and pound. See if they can figure out a way to do that. By the way, the expectations for Wisconsin last year, they were favored in 11 out of 12 games and went 7-6. 11 out of 13 with the bowl game. They were not favored there. But I would imagine they're going to be maybe have a chance to sneak up on a few more teams this year than they did last year.
Indiana's new coach, Kurt Cignetti.
Yeah.
He's drumming up interest. He's fired up for it. Just came in from James Madison, where he did a great job. Did you get some time listening to him? And what did he say?
Yeah, he doesn't mind dropping some curse words, does he? On the main podium and around the facility a little bit.
I was startled and scared and offended, but.
Clutch your pearls.
It's a little
man.
Much
Did
for
you
me.
Clutch the pearls?
Yeah.
No, Cignetti, a little different vibe. Yeah, you're a little different vibe from him than a lot of other coaches. And he's got. I tell you what, man, you talk like that though. It's one of those things, you know. You gotta your expectation level. You gotta back it up, right? Gotta back it up. So it'd be interesting to see that how that will happen.
I have to report some breaking news here. Mr. Bill Hancock just walked into the Sports Illustrated office.
Oh, look at there.
Yes, college Mr. football Hancock. Dignitary, Bill Hancock. Yeah. We're taping the podcast right now, Bill. I'm telling you. So,
Bill. Bill does not miss the Olympics.
There's some college football happening here.
That is
true. In Paris.
I did talk to Bill about some college football in the USA Olympic Committee offices, USO Olympic and Paralympic Committee offices. So,
there you go.
Ask Bill what will happen when Notre Dame is ranked number one in their fifth seed. Let's see what he says about that.
Yeah, throw that out.
No longer Bill's problem. No longer Bill's problem.
That's right. Yeah, you're right. Yeah. You're right on that.
He said he should have retired 5 years ago, but we're happy. So one of Cignetti's big moments last year was when he went in front of everyone at the Indiana basketball game and said, I don't plan on taking a backseat to anyone. And then said Purdue sucks, but so does Michigan and Ohio State. Bold words from an Indiana football coach. Factually correct? I don't know. That'd be his own thing. Purdue now has the world's smallest drum. I don't know if you saw that. They have a professor who created the smallest drum in the world. That is official. I've not seen anybody say they got a smaller drum. South Korea has a bigger drum. But they don't have a smaller one. And I don't think you really suck if you can make a real small drum. I think that is a skill that is that demonstrably makes sure you don't suck. He was asked about this, and he said, you know, you get to 62, 63, you lose your filter bit, right? And when you're used to success, you've been on campus all day, you detect some things you don't like, it gets under your skin. We're in the entertainment business. It's coaching, but it's entertainment. I remember Jim Tressel, when he went to Ohio State, he said something about beating Michigan. I just got ramped up a little bit, I guess. You got 17,000 people in the basketball arena. I got excited. The first part was easy, but why stop there? And we set the bar at 6-6. We're going after these two. We want to be the best. Love it. Let's go.
Yeah. No. I'm glad he acknowledged maybe perhaps overstating things to begin with. But, yeah, why not think big, talk big? I mean, he's not the first guy to do it at Indiana. None of the other guys actually could do it, but they're not the first guy to talk it. You know, remember, the former coach that we had on the radio show back in the day.
Kevin Allen?
Kevin Allen. Yeah. And he was a little chesty that we weren't taking some of his big talk too seriously. And then... you know, they have these periods of bursts of optimism followed by crushing reality. But give Kirk a chance to cook and see what he can come up with.
By the way, did we all catch Deshaun Foster's introduction at Big Ten Media Day?
Yeah, I don't think he was quite ready for an opening statement.
Yeah, Yeah, I don't think so. But you know, he later on he made light of it and said some things like, "Oh, I'm sure I'm going to be like famous on Twitter now," you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was famous in one way.
I think he's doing all right. He's getting a few recruits. I don't know. I still got faith in him. I got a faith in him. Couple other stories here. One sent by a listener from the Wheeling, West Virginia paper. Former West Virginia basketball star Kevin Pitsnoggle. Remember Pitsnoggle? 6'11", was draining threes.
Took the Mountaineers. He was the original stretch four slash stretch five.
Yeah. The legend has it his basketball court had a hill on it outside his house, so he got really good at hitting shots so that ball wouldn't roll down the hill. I don't know if that was true or not, but I'm sure I printed it. Helped the Mountaineers to an Elite Eight and a Sweet 16. He's now a middle school principal. Congratulations.
How about that?
Martinsburg North Middle School. Now, middle schoolers could be total pains in the neck, right?
Lower than the neck.
Who's messing with this guy?
Yeah. When 6'10 comes walking down the hallway saying, "Get in class."
Assistant principal. Yeah, assistant principal Pitsnoggle. I am not. So that was nice. And then literally everybody sent us this. It's a good story. Texas Longhorn special team corner Jeff Banks married his girlfriend Danny Thomas, who became famous a few Halloweens back.
Another name, Dan. We know her by another name.
She's formerly known as the Pole Assassin for her work in the dancing industry. Pole Assassin, and they had a Halloween party where some kids got bit by a pet monkey. And that was she has a pet monkey that she sometimes performs with or used to, and she took the side of the monkey. She wrote an 12 year old child,
it was her monkey,
should know better than to enter someone's yard without permission and old enough to follow the rules. You weren't supposed to go near the monkey. They did. It was a rather big story at the time.
It was among the biggest stories the pod has ever had.
Yeah. Needless to say, social media had thoughts on this entire story, but they got married. So congrats to the couple. They went to Barcelona for their honeymoon. Really proud of them. So love stands a chance. No word on the monkey.
It's my question. Did the monkey attend the wedding and or the honeymoon?
I don't know.
Did he perform at all?
I hope the monkey skipped down the aisle with the ring or something. It'd be great.
Hook 'em.
I was trying to find the headline that was with, you know, this ended up being obviously a story that was written about, and goodness, I can't find this. There was a specific headline with this story, and it was just, you couldn't make it up, right? Like you couldn't get the string of words. Here it is. This is for the win, I think, with USA Today. This is their headline on the story. Texas Longhorns coach and exotic dancer pole assassin marry 3 years after viral monkey bite.
That's pretty much everything right there.
And then we have this came in from a pod listener who came over to the Olympics. I believe he's here. Daily Mail, of course. Oh, I got so excited the other day. I was at a press conference and the Daily Mail asked a question.
I wanted
to go over and introduce myself.
Oh man. Yeah. They tell them you're their target audience.
Yeah, I really am. This is from Oliver Christie. I don't know if Olivia Christie, I'm sorry. Olivia Christie, the Olympic flame here is fake. The Olympic flame that wowed the world at the Paris 2024 opening ceremony, a floating cauldron, is not real, but in fact, 100% electric, organizers have revealed. The fake flame is created using 40 LED lights and water mist, meaning it is safe for anyone to touch. Paris has aimed to deliver the greenest Olympic Games ever, with the traditional cauldron flame usually reliant on fossil fuels. So they have admitted that they have a fake flame. Pat, do you feel cheated?
I will say this. Among the people that passed that along is a regular pod listener and an athletic administrator who thought that this was as wheelhouse as it gets for us. Do I feel cheated? No, I do not. You know what? The Flames served. It has one purpose, maybe two. One is just to be lit up, you know, in some grandiose and spectacular fashion during the opening ceremony, which I guess more or less it was, and then to be extinguished at the end of the game. So that's all it has to do. So if they want to put batteries in there or whatever, you go right ahead for the interregnum between there.
I was wondering how they were going to keep that thing going with the fuel.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I was stunned. I don't like their flame. I didn't think it was a good flame.
I mean, I don't know. I guess I'm a little bit of a flame snob. I was at the my first Olympics, 1992 Barcelona, where the archer shot the arrow into the cauldron and lit it. To me, it's just not going to get better than that. And so everything else is going to suffer in comparison. I could go into great painful detail about Muhammad Ali lighting the torch in Atlanta and ruining my night as the local Louisville reporter when Louisville's own Ali lit it. But since from 92 on, it's all been downhill for flame lighting.
I kind of thought put it up on top of the Eiffel Tower, but actually the Eiffel Tower is awesome on its own with all the lights and stuff. But I just, this thing, I don't know. I'm not feeling it. I feel cheated. I mean, yeah, total waste of fossil fuel. There's no question. But, you know.
I think you need to lower your expectations for the flame, Dan.
I want my Olympics to be burning bright. I don't know. It's kind of weird. Everything's like outside. The thing was that flame would just be at the stadium. And if you weren't in the stadium, you couldn't see it anyway. So I guess this thing now is in this park. Same park where they beheaded Marie Antoinette. I saw it the other day, but it wasn't glowing bright either.
I did. I have to give him credit too with the opening ceremony. The French beheading humor.
I didn't know that was a thing.
You know,
it was we won't get into that thing. That opening ceremony.
Yeah, there was a lot.
It was a lot. All right. Anyway, that's our show. We'll be back later in the week. And part-time Ross did leave. That's why I didn't comment on the flame. Of course.
Part-time Ross, even though he's the only one covering college football working. Right now.
Yeah. We'll be back later in the week. More college football talk. Appreciate you guys listening. We'll talk to you later.